On the show today, Russia's navy is attacked.
Sources on Friday said the vessel was seriously damaged in the attack at the Russian navy base of Novorossiysk.
Plus, Ukrainian young people are in Portugal for World Youth Day with Pope Francis.
We feel like we at home. Everyone say us to hello. Everyone ask where are we from and say that we are with you. We pray for you.
And later in the program, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken addresses the U.N. about food insecurity. Plus, is Ukraine joining NATO a good idea? Today is Friday, August 4th. From the Voice of America, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening, I'm Steve Karish in Washington. We'll find out about the attack on the Russian Navy in a moment. First, though, a developing political story from Russia. Jailed Russian opposition politician Alexei Navalny had an extra 19 years added to his jail term on Friday in a criminal case that he and his supporters said has been trumped up to keep him behind bars and out of politics for even longer. The AP's Charles de Ledesma has more.
Navalny is already serving a 9-year term on a variety of charges that he says were politically motivated. The extremism charges against the politician relate to the activities of Navalny's anti-corruption foundation and statements by his top associates. Navalny, who's 47, is President Vladimir Putin's fiercest foe and has exposed official corruption and organized major anti-Kremlin protests. He was arrested in January 2021 upon returning to Moscow after recuperating in Germany from nerve agent poisoning. He's blamed that poisoning on the Kremlin, but the Kremlin's denied involvement. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
VOA's UN correspondent caught up with U.S. Ambassador to the UN, Linda Thomas-Greenfield. Here's what she had to say about Navalny's sentencing.
Ambassador Thomas-Greenfield, while we're on the subject of Russia, there's a bit of breaking news this morning from Moscow. Russian opposition leader Alexei Navalny has been sentenced to a further 19 years in prison on extremism charges. Your reaction?
Sad, but not surprised. It is clear that the Russian government, that Putin, that this authoritarian government will use any means to restrict the voices of the opposition, restrict the voices of criticism. Navalny represents that. He is being held in an unacceptable way. He should not have been in this court system, and we condemn the actions of the Russian government as it relates to him.
That's U.S. UN Ambassador Linda Thomas-Greenfield. She was speaking with VOA's Margaret Bashir. Russia has accused Ukraine of attacking its navy at a port east of Crimea in an incident that two sources told Reuters had seriously damaged a Russian warship. Reuters' Lauren Anthony has the story.
This is footage from a Ukrainian naval drone as it reportedly hit a Russian warship in the Black Sea's dark waters overnight. Sources on Friday said the vessel was seriously damaged in the attack at the Russian navy base of Novorossiysk, after Russia said it had fended off the assault. The civilian port, which handles 2% of the world's oil supply and also exports grain, temporarily halted all ship movement. It later resumed normal operations, according to the Caspian Pipeline Consortium. Russia's defense ministry claimed the drones had been destroyed, without mentioning any damage. Video footage published on social media, however, seemed to show the boats ablaze and listing badly. A Ukrainian intelligence source said the Olenegorsky-Gornyak ship had suffered a serious breach and could no longer conduct combat missions. The operation, they said, was a joint one between the Ukrainian Navy and the SBU intelligence service. They added that around 100 Russian servicemen were aboard the vessel when it was hit, along with almost 100 pounds of TNT. Reuters was not able to immediately verify assertions about damage to the warship, and there was no immediate comment from Moscow.
That's Lauren Anthony of Reuters reporting for us. For more on that attack on the Russian Navy, plus some info about what might be an upcoming battle in the counteroffensive, I'm joined by Anna Chernikova in Kyiv. Anna, we understand the Russians are accusing the Ukrainians of attacking their navy. Of course, the Ukrainians don't say anything about attacks, but what can you tell us about what happened?
Definitely Russian side is accusing Ukrainian, and definitely it looks like a Ukrainian operation. At least this is what we're hearing here inside of the country. Reportedly, this attack was prepared by the security service of Ukraine together with the Ukrainian Navy forces. And of course, it looks like, at least we have some footage from the drone, so it looks like it was this Navy drone attack. And previously, we were hearing that President Zelensky was saying that actually operations with the Navy forces would be one of the priorities for Ukrainian forces.
Now, along with the video footage of the drone, we've seen some photographs of what appears to be a Russian naval ship leaning heavily to one side as if it's badly damaged. What do you know about the extent of the damage to the Russian Navy, to the port, to anything else in the area?
Again, not officially, but reportedly, what is discussed here is that one of the battleships received a serious haul, got a serious haul due to this attack, and is currently unable to perform its combat tasks. Russian side said that the attack was repulsed, but again, we can clearly see that it's something wrong with the battleship.
And besides this naval attack, is there any other frontline update? Anything else happening militarily?
What is interesting and what is also actively discussed inside Ukraine, that apparently Ukrainian forces are getting ready for quite a big battle in the Zaporizhia region, in the Zaporizhia direction, even better to say. And why it is discussed? Because defense forces deployed the reserve 10th Army Corps in that area. And this particular settlement, which we're talking about, is located less than 2.5 kilometers from the main defense line of the Russian forces. And a lot of experts say that this battle could be of quite a strategic importance in the nearest future.
And we'll leave it there for today, Anna. I hope you're able to stay cool this evening and this weekend. Anna Chernikova in Kyiv. Anna, as always, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Steve.
Should Ukraine join NATO? We'll have that conversation in a few minutes. Right now, though, World Youth Day. At the Global Catholic Youth Festival in Lisbon, Portugal, Olena Shevchuk says she is getting a welcome break from the pain of the war in her native Ukraine.
So it's very strange for us to see that it's very music everywhere, coffee, cafe, restaurants are open, and in the night, open all the things and you can go wherever you want.
That contrasts with the situation in her hometown in central Ukraine, Vinnytsia, where an 11 p.m. curfew is in place. She's part of a group of some 500 young Ukrainians who traveled to Portugal to join Pope Francis at the World Youth Day, which is actually a six-day international Catholic jamboree. Shevchuk said during her first days outside Ukraine, she was startled by the sight of planes in the sky, because at home, that would have sent her racing to a bomb shelter. Many of the Ukrainians wear traditional embroidered shirts or carry yellow and blue Ukrainian flags, making them easily identifiable among the other pilgrims.
Everyone say us to hello, everyone ask where are we from, and say that we are with you, we pray for you. It's very emotional things that we understand that many people understand what happened in our country, and they also with us, pray for us.
A fellow pilgrim has written, "France loves you," on Olena's flag. Pope Francis met with 15 youths from the Ukrainian delegation on Thursday at the Holy See's diplomatic mission, where he's staying in Lisbon. The Pope has repeatedly called for peace in Ukraine and has sought to play a mediating role, though his efforts have yet to yield results. You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Karish. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken called out Russia Thursday at a meeting of the UN Security Council for the impact its invasion of Ukraine is having on global hunger. VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports.
Russia has been targeting ports and storage facilities vital for shipping grain from Ukraine. The strikes come after Moscow pulled out of the Black Sea Grain Initiative last month, an agreement that allowed Kyiv to export grain to global markets during the Russian invasion. On Thursday, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken chaired a meeting at the United Nations Security Council focused on food insecurity, and called out Moscow as Ukrainian trucks can no longer load their grains onto ships.
Every member of this council, every member of the United Nations, should tell Moscow, enough. Enough using the Black Sea as blackmail. Enough treating the world's most vulnerable people as leverage. Enough of this unjustified, unconscionable war.
International Rescue Committee President David Miliband told the Council there is consensus that conflict is the primary driver of food insecurity today, worsened by the climate crisis.
We also know the countries. Every single assessment has the same list. Somalia, Afghanistan, Yemen, Nigeria, South Sudan, Sudan, Burkina Faso, Mali, Haiti. The analysis is not in dispute. But analysis is too often followed by paralysis.
Blinken noted that 5 years ago, the UN Security Council adopted a resolution saying that the intentional starvation of civilians may constitute a war crime.
Nearly 90 countries, including the United States, have already signed a new joint communique that we drafted and circulated, committing to end the use of famine, starvation, and food as weapons of war. Hunger must not be weaponized. I urge all member states to join this communique.
Russian President Vladimir Putin hosted leaders of African countries late last month for a summit as the continent braced for the consequences of Moscow's withdrawal from the Ukraine grain export deal. Moscow tried to reassure its African partners, saying it understood their concern and was ready to export grain for free to African countries that need it. At the United Nations, relief experts discuss the global food supply, saying it is not a question of there not being enough food to feed everyone. It is a question of people in many countries not having enough food to survive because it is being blocked by unnecessary conflict. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
After addressing the UN, Secretary Blinken spoke with the press.
To be very clear, the sanctions imposed by us and others for Russia's aggression in Ukraine have from day one exempted its own food products. And that includes not just the food products, but the means to ship them and insure them. And in fact, just now, if you look at where Russian exports are, its exports of food exceed what they were before its aggression against Ukraine. Having said that, to the extent that there have been any problems with things like shipping and insurance, we have, throughout the process of the Black Sea Grain Initiative, taken steps to work through them and to address them, including, for example, writing comfort letters to banks to assure them that it was fine to process these transactions and that they wouldn't run afoul of our sanctions. So, in the event of return to the agreement, of course, we'll continue to do whatever is necessary to make sure that everyone can export their food and food products freely and safely, to include Russia. We want to see that food on world markets. We want everyone to benefit from the lower prices.
For its part, Russia said Friday that it needed actions, not promises, from the United States to meet the conditions it had set for a return to the Black Sea grain deal. Kremlin spokesperson Dmitry Peskov is reacting to Blinken's statement.
The Americans do not need to provide security. It was provided for as part of the grain deal. Without the Americans. The Americans should, if they want to contribute, help with fulfilling the part of the grain deal that is due to Russia, not promise they will think about it, but get it done. As soon as it is done, the deal will immediately be renewed. It has been said many times, including by President Vladimir Putin. Take two. The Americans do not need to provide security. It was provided for as part of the grain deal, without the Americans. The Americans should, if they want to contribute, help with fulfilling the part of the grain deal that is due to Russia. Not promise they will think about it, but get it done. As soon as it is done, the deal will immediately be renewed. It has been said many times, including by President Putin.
That's Kremlin spokesperson Dmitry Peskov on Friday. One of Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky's biggest wishes for his country is for it to join NATO. He's spoken about it several times since the war began, including at the recent NATO summit in Vilnius. While the U.S. and many other NATO members do not think that having a country currently at war joining the alliance is a good idea, the door is not closed to Ukraine joining when hostilities have stopped. My next guest doesn't think that's the right thing to do. Josh Schifrinson is a non-resident senior fellow at the Cato Institute and an associate professor at the University of Maryland.
I think we have to remember, number one, that NATO is ultimately an alliance that is designed to provide security to other countries. And to do so, the United States and the other allies promised to go to war, ultimately go to war. This is embedded in NATO's Article 5 commitment on behalf of any member of the alliance. The problem with taking Ukraine into NATO under those conditions is that, A, the United States has already indicated during the current war that it doesn't believe Ukraine is worth fighting for. And
What makes you say that?
Well, in the very real sense that there's been a war on since February of 2022, and President Biden and the entire U.S. foreign policy establishment and the U.S. people have very clearly said, we do not want to join this war for the sake of Ukraine. We don't want to risk war with Russia. We don't think Ukraine is worth fighting for. They're willing to provide aid to Ukraine, military assistance to Ukraine, but they're not willing to go to the last measure and actually wage war for Ukraine. In fact, if you look at even how the U.S. has calibrated its aid deliveries to Ukraine, it's been very careful to do so, trying to remain below the threshold that we think might trigger the Russians to escalate against the West.
Okay, and what else? What are the other reasons Ukraine should not be allowed in?
Well, so as I was getting at, the alliance has a commitment to fight and die for the sake of Ukraine. The United States has already indicated it's not willing to do so. And under those conditions, taking Ukraine into NATO, A, gives Russia incentives to challenge the status quo, to see if this commitment is really credible, if the U.S. is really willing now to go to the last full measure. It's kind of a non-credible promise under those conditions because Russia has evidence the U.S. may not really follow through. Number two, it's very costly to defend Ukraine. It's not easy to make deterrence stick, to make defense stick. The U.S. has already the U.S. resources already in demand elsewhere. And finally, because any decision to take Ukraine into NATO is actually going to be a prolonged discussion, we've seen how long, for example, the Finnish and Swedish discussions have gone, it would simply give Russia incentives to continue the war even longer than it already has, because the alliance very openly says it doesn't want to take in a member that is involved in an active military dispute.
I'm glad you brought up Sweden and Finland. Would not the same arguments that you're giving me about Ukraine apply to them as well?
Well, so in the abstract, yes, but not necessarily in reality. You know, not all countries see all. So two different issues here. Number one, you're asked, there's a question of why Ukraine seems to be so resonant for Russia. And I don't have a good answer for that. So I can't tell you why Russia seems to care a lot about Ukraine, but not as much about Finland, Sweden, but it seems to be the case, point number one. Then point number two, you know, we have to go back and run the counterfactual. The question isn't why did Russia tolerate Finnish and Swedish accession to NATO at a time when the war was already on, it was already engaged in a hard fight. The question is, would Russia have tolerated that or have pushed back on that if the movement had occurred in peacetime? If, you know, Ukraine wasn't in the picture, so to speak, Finland began moving into NATO, would that actually prompt Russia to escalate against Finland?
What about the Baltic states and Poland? Because they joined NATO during peace.
Right. So those are good examples. And so let's hold Poland aside because it's not on Russia's border. And the Baltic states, we know, number one, really did trigger incredible Russian concern with NATO expansion. That's when, if you go back historically and look at the archives, much of the Russian opposition to NATO really began kicking off. So I think you can point to the Baltic accession to NATO as in some ways the start, the real start of the real animosity between East and West, point number one. Point number two, I think we also have to remember that in 2003-2004, Russia was in a much weaker position militarily. You know, the submarines had been sinking just a few years before. The country was nearly bankrupt. We have to remember how low oil prices were. And this was also the height of the U.S. unipolar moment, 2002, 2003, 2004, when Baltic accession began to kick off. I think if you rerun the process and you say, okay, so it's a Russia that isn't as economically and militarily destitute as it was, that maybe the U.S. is distracted elsewhere, it's not clear they would have tolerated the Baltic states going in.
What about the counter-argument that says by allowing Ukraine into NATO, that will deter further Russian aggression?
Right. So the problem with that argument, I think, is severalfold. Number one, taking Ukraine into NATO still requires hard capabilities to deter Ukraine or deter any country brought into the alliance. And so we've already seen the alliance struggling in the last two summits and various policy declarations to acquire the capabilities needed to make deterrence stick. Number two, it assumes that Russia sees countries joining the alliance as a punishment versus more of a signal of threat. You know, I think there's good evidence that the two sides are locked in a spiral where there's an action-reaction process where each one sees the other one as engaging in threatening activities. And so it's not a punishment issue, it becomes a threatening issue. And then finally, to the question of wouldn't taking Ukraine into NATO actually deter future Russian aggression? You know, at the end of the day, states are deterred by the balance of capabilities and interests in front of them. And unless the alliance is able to really credibly say, all the countries around Russia's periphery are a vital part of my interest, then Russia may or may not be deterred in the future. It's not clear that these issues travel to other parts of the Russian periphery.
A final question for you. We see the fighting, we see the suffering, we see the war on the news every night. It's natural to want to help. It's natural to want to protect people who seem to be so vulnerable. Surely it's understandable that beyond recognizing Ukrainian suffering, that there's a will to help, a will to protect. Yes?
Yes, absolutely. That emotional pull is real. It's profound. I feel it, and I hope everyone listening feels it. At the end of the day, though, what we're talking about are possible instances of life and death, not just for Ukraine, which is tragically already in that situation, but for other citizens, other countries, and the member and others of the global community. What we need to do, therefore, is think carefully about risks, capabilities, and interests, and not let emotions swamp analysis, not of what you can do, but of of the dangers that might happen if you do take certain actions. And that's what I stay up at night thinking about. I worry profoundly that the U.S. and its NATO allies might miscalculate when it comes to Ukraine, might do something that is seen in Russia as reckless when it comes to Ukraine, and therefore widen the war and create even more human suffering. That's the thought that keeps me up at night.
Josh Schifrinson is a non-resident senior fellow at the Cato Institute and associate professor at the University of Maryland. Professor, thanks for your time today. Thanks for your analysis.
Oh, thank you, Steve. And anytime.
And that'll do it for us today. Stay up to date with continuing coverage of Ukraine and news from around the world 24 hours a day. Visit us online at voanews.com and on social media. Be sure to follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire Flashpoint Ukraine team, thanks for listening. Until next time, I'm Steve Karish.
This is the voice of America, Washington, D.C.